Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining me for another episode of Cinemafiles Radio. I'm your host, Steve Pisa. Thank you so much for being here today. It is the holiday weekend. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I hope you're safe. I hope you're happy. I hope with people that love you and you love back. Now, I love the holidays. I know a lot of people get incredibly depressed during the holidays, and I've been there myself plenty of times, but I do love the holidays. How do you feel about the holidays? Colin, we have a phone number right here, 515-602-9309. There's another number here as well. 515-602-9609, just in case the other number is just busy or taken, just give me another call. We have a great guest today. We have Gene Freeman, actor, producer. He does stunts. He does everything. We want to talk to him about his life, where he's been, where he's going, what he's going to do. And we want to ask him if he's a Star Wars fan. That's kind of important today. I'm about to tell you about the fact that I saw Star Wars. Did you see Star Wars? Loved it. No spoilers. But I love that film. Yeah, you know, I'll definitely say that it definitely felt like fan service. Like they were trying to, you know, get to me and tell me everything I wanted to hear. I'm not unfamiliar with that tactic. But I appreciated it. I really enjoyed it. That film was fantastic. Great ending. Great beginning. It did feel, of course, like they shoved two movies into one. So they shoehorned it in. So that was kind of incredible. But I'll talk a little bit about The Mandalorian as well. The Mandalorian is one of my favorite shows right now. Right now is my favorite show. Disney Plus. Can you believe it? I don't even know if it's sponsored by Disney Plus. Mandalorian is a great show. Hey, let's ask Gene Freeman. Let's see if he's seen The Mandalorian, what he thinks of The Mandalorian, if he's seen the Star Wars film. Let's get him on the line here.
Hello.
Gene, you there?
I am there. I'm here.
Everybody's so excited that you're here with us. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Have you seen any of the Star Wars films? Are you a Star Wars fan?
Actually, I am a Star Wars fan. I have seen a couple of the films. I haven't seen the last one or Rogue
okay.
One, but I've pretty much seen everything else.
Oh, Rogue One's fantastic. You have to see. And they're also going to do a Disney Plus Rogue One show. So you definitely have to see that movie before that show comes out. And then you have
okay.
you have other active things you can get into as well, but let's talk a little bit about you. So, Gene, you were not born in LA. You were born in Lansing, Michigan, right?
Yes, I was born in Lansing, Michigan. That's correct.
So, how was it like being born in Michigan and then having the desire to be an actor? Because I went to Michigan several times and. That is the middle of nowhere, to a certain extent. I mean, I got to say.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in Michigan, you can get, like, you know, a sense of all the seasons.
Right.
You know, I started with music, so that's pretty much where I spent majority of my time cultivating my music, my sound, and then my artistry with comics. And from there, you know, it went into, hey, let's go to L.A., you know, thanks to my friend Ryan. He was like, hey, we're going to L.A. We're going to start out here. you know, if you're more than welcome to come. And so that's kind
of, so you started off with music.
Yeah, I started out with music. Mm-hmm.
Really? What did you want to do in music? And what do you still want to do in music?
Actually, that's the thing. We were actually doing it. I was a singer-songwriter at first. And
nice.
Then just like everything else, it like cultivated. It was like I didn't want to wait for people to make music or make beats because, again, all I did was just sing and write. So I got to the point where I started making my own beats and learning how that worked. And then, you know, other things in life would happen where it was like, well, you can't just sing. You can't just write. You also got to learn how to rap and, you know, entertain the people and
situation. Yeah, absolutely. I know that world as well. Let me ask you, what were your major influences? Because, you know, if you're a little bit younger, you know, maybe you have some of the other ones. But in my world, mm-hmm. it was some of the old folks. What were your major inspirations mm-hmm. when you were coming up and making beats, like listening to those beats and making like the fresh beats?
Yeah. Well, production wise, I was a big Neptunes fan, Timberland.
Nice.
I forgot the guy's name.
So you were in the Timberland era then?
Yeah, I was that was a lot of that stuff that was playing around me and just those unique sounds and hearing that energy. So it was like, and I just figured like that's where my niche was. So,
right.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. So what did you do with that musical? So you worked with your group. You came out to LA with that musical group. So what came of that?
Oh, hello. Oh, so basically,
yeah.
What came of it was we traveled all over. We put out our own compilation CD. We had like some of the best people in our area on it at one point or another. And then we went on tour. We were selling it ourselves out of the trunk. We would go on these college tours, and we would promote our stuff. We'd go to like spring break. We'd go to Florida. We'd travel all over the U.S. and just making a name for ourselves and just getting in and making it happen. So it's pretty cool.
Nice. Well, what was your sound similar to? Did you have a similar sound to any artist that we might recognize?
You know, we always got, like, people say, like, from the hip-hop sound, it was, like, very feel-good music. It had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
You want to dance. You want to have fun. You know, you had
right.
me who was, like, my thing was always about radio. Like, what's fun, what's hot, what's trending. You know, then I have, like, my other brother who was very lyrically conscious. So you have, like, a person who's, like, more, like, Common. I would say I was more like a Ludacris, Method Man, MKG type. You know, so I was always like, party, just have fun. And then with the music, singing-wise, it would be
right.
more like Tank or Music Soul Child is very
oh sure,
melodic
yeah.
and Drew Hill. Yeah. So, yeah.
Sure.
Just a little bit
those are great influences. Yeah, that's really nice. Hey, well, what switched you mm-hmm. over to, you know, going from music to going into acting and producing and song work and what have you? It was it just purely based on your physicality or was it based on other things?
You know, it was just the timing of it. Because when we came out to LA, you know, we didn't know anything about film at all. So it was
yeah.
like someone was like, hey, while we're out on Hollywood Boulevard selling our CD, you know, someone was like, hey, you guys should go to Central Casting. And we're like, what's Central Casting? And they're like, oh, it's like this place you do like background and all this other stuff. And that's where it all begins. And I was like, okay. So I went and, you know, next thing I'm on like Die Hard, doing background work, and then they're like, yeah, we might bump you up, but you might be a little too tall for the actor, but we might stay tight because we might bump you up and get you tapped hardly. And I'm like, wow, I don't even know what that means. So like
right.
started coming to me in these situations.
All the lingo.
I mean,
all the lingo started coming to you
yeah.
really fast, huh?
yeah, yeah. So
how did you
like,
deal with that?
Got to learn quick.
I just
took it all in and learned quick and paid attention. I was always the type that would come on a set to listen and learn and see what I can pick up because I'm like a sponge. Like, I'm just like, let me just see how this works, just like
right.
anything else. So
you started off with extra work. What was the extra work you started off doing?
You know what? I got really blessed really fast in that. Luckily for me, because when Central Casting would call me, they would call me like, hey, we need a double to go to the Playboy Mansion or we need
right.
you to, you know, go to – so like I said, go to Die Hard and then work on Hancock. So like a lot of the stuff I got was
wow.
a lot of cop or a lot of criminal. And, you know, it was like really fast. Yeah, it was like I wasn't doing background that long before, you know, they got me my SAG and all that other stuff. Like, it wasn't that long for me.
Oh, they just pushed you along, huh?
Yeah, they really did. Like, thanks to Central Casting for really looking out, because they really picked up quick for me.
Yeah, I've worked for Central Casting for a very long time. They're an incredible group. Tell me, what happened after that? So you started getting this background work a lot, you know, started working very well for you. Where did you move on from there?
Mm-hmm. From the background, it's funny. I was living in Watts at the time. So I'm like, well, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to move to next. I'm kind of bouncing around because I just came back from Atlanta. Like, we had this crazy situation with the music. And so they're like, hey, where we're going to Victorville, you're more than welcome to come. I don't know where that is, but they're like, yeah, you can still do your film and music stuff. You know, it's just a little commute. It's come to find out it's not a little commute.
Yeah, no, that's a different. Really huge commute.
Yeah. It's like the hills have eyes out there. There's nothing out there but snow and dirt. Like, you know, so it made me get back into my music once I moved out there.
Wow.
So, like, the acting stuff was on pause, which was kind of sucked, because I had a nice momentum, because I had met, like, Aaron Magruder, Carl Jones. These are the guys who were, like, working on the Boondocks.
Nice.
And, you know, but I'm up on a mountain, so I can't really, really mingle with everyone, like, you know, because, like, you got to be in face, out of sight, out of mind type deal. So,
sure.
You know.
Sure. So what do you do after that? You're stuck in Victorville. You've got a large commute. You got things to do. You got background and stuff. Your career's taken off. I mean, how do you get out of there?
Yeah. So I end up not getting out of there right away. I had to pause on the acting stuff, and so I ended up going back into my music. And then while I was working on my music and making new music, I was going to their Victor Valley College, and I was learning about animation and drawing, because I have an extensive background in drawing, and I had ideas that I wanted to put together that I thought would be great for the industry. So I was like, well, let me learn how this works, and let me see if I can start putting packages together to pitch. So that's what I did while I was in Victorville.
So you're making EPKs while you're in Victorville, doing all these things to further your career. Yeah. What was the first thing that came along your way that kind of pushed you along? I mean, I can see your IMDb, but I want to know from you, like, what really pushed you along that helped you during that period?
I think what helped me along was while I was learning what I was learning, my brothers were still in the business. They still stayed in Hollywood. So, like, my brother Chris J. Alex, he was steadily doing his thing there, and he'd be like, hey, I'm going to this thing. If you want to come, you know, check it out. It'd be kind of fun if you can get down here. You know, and a couple of times I would go to these events, and, you know, and then I would see them on Facebook. Facebook was probably the most pinnacle part to keep me not just in the loop, but it would give me an opportunity to see what other people are into in the industry and start reaching out to them in a professional way where it didn't feel too overbearing. So
social media is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Like, if you really want to get to know a person and just kind of not just coming from, like, what I can get out of them, but more so how you can help them. That was a lot of what I started to learn as well, because I started picking up cameras and learning how to shoot once I got back, how they say, down the hill.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I'm learning all these tricks of the trade, Photoshop and all that stuff. And it really helped me once I came back down.
Is that what you're doing within your time? Like, while you're in Victorville, you're, like, just working on your trade, working on your craft, just getting everything down. And then you get yourself out to L.A., right? And you're getting some more chances. What's the first chance you get that kind of pops you up?
The first chance I get that pops up? That's a good question. I would have to say, you know, a couple of these short films that were coming out, people were doing that I would come across in, like, these training camps. You know, Terry Tini, he had this thing called Hollywood Stunts, and he would have it, like, once or twice out of the week, and there would be people in there that would have these, like, you know, short films they'd want need help with. And meanwhile, I'm like, well, I'm not really much in front of the camera, but I'm really working behind it, because I really wanted to get a sense of how to tell the stories that I wanted to tell and really get those in the door. So people would have me start directing and doing camera work and, you know, so help putting these stories together. So that's why it would be the next thing that helped me cultivate what I was going to be doing overall. Like, okay, I want to be very good in front of the camera. So right now, the best way to do that is to really work behind it.
You're working on your film. You're working on behind the camera. Yeah, you're working on your music. You're working on your writing. What in the world gets you involved in stunts? I mean, when you have all these other things that seem to be like really cerebral, you go right into the blunt effect of being like knocked out or like, you know, having to do 360s, you know, horizontally. You know, what gathers you to that department?
The stunts. That's a good question. Because my brother, he started with stunts, and it's kind of funny because he'll be like, he'll show me something that he's getting into, and we're very similar, you know, we just might have a yin and yang approach to it, but we're very similar.
But you like the same, you both like pizza, but one likes Chicago, one likes New York.
Exactly. Like, he might get my kids with pepperoni, and I might like mine with ham. So, you know, but we still like pizza. I do. You know, I feel like I had some cool moments where I would be acting and then they'd be like, well, can you hit the ground? So, or can you do this? And so it would be like, okay, yeah, I could do that. I figure I could try that out. And, you know, but the person who really got me, who really gave me a shot when he even said it himself, was Billy Washington. He's a great guy. He's pretty much very instrumental. He gave me my first SAG scale job doubling for Method Man.
On
John Singleton's show. Yeah, it was a big show. And I didn't even know how big it was or anything or even to the magnitude of him. Like during that time, I was in my car. I was living in my car for like 9 months.
Right.
And, you know, this guy, he's just, I knew like I didn't want to stay in my car. I didn't want to just loaf around. So, like, I'm picking up my iMac and I'm going to, like, the coffee shop to go edit to work on something. Or I'm in the gym at the sauna at, like, 7 a.m. and this guy's walking in and he's talking and he's, like, got all these people interested. I'm like, who is this guy? And I'm just like, I'm just saying, this is class. Just don't talk. Just listen. And so during, like, for, like, 2 months, he's just talking. And then one day somebody said to me, you know, you have an opportunity to go out for Straight Outta Compton. We need your picture. And so I send in my picture to Nito. Shout out to Nito. And then I didn't get it. And so I didn't get the call back, but I was in the hot tub at the gym and somebody, he just kind of looked like I've seen him before. You know, again, social media has been so great putting people in these things.
It's
so
amazing.
You're seeing them. You're like, and it's like, I see this person. Like, you look familiar. And he's like, oh, man, you know, I did this thing on this fan film of Power Rangers. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, you know what? I just worked on Straight Outta Compton. I was like, I just was trying to get up for that. And he's like, dude, you should go hustle the coordinator. And I for those that are in the stunt community know what that is. They know all about hustling. I never have hustled a coordinator ever. So I was like, I don't know what that entails.
It's a big hustle. It's a big hustle.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. You go on a set. I just use my experience. So the dude was like, yeah, just go hustle. So I hop on. I find out where they're going to be, and I hop on the shuttle. The shuttle taking me all the way to the set, and then it took me back. The coordinator isn't there yet. The goal is you're supposed to get there before the coordinator, have a quick, like, one-minute conversation, tell them about all the stuff that you've done, and, you know, hopefully and you hand your headshot, your resume, and they'll put it in the trailer, and hopefully you'll get work. That's the plan. So I didn't have a headshot, didn't have a resume. And so I asked the guy who was always in the sauna, I was like, hey, what do you do if you ever want someone to hustle a coordinator? He's like, well, what would you do? And I was like, well, you know, I can hit the ground. I can do camera work. And then he said, don't mention the camera work. You say you want to hit the ground. Don't mention that. I was like, okay, no problem. I can do that. You know, don't mention
any of your ambitions, man. Just say you can hit the ground, like a banana, and just go with that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Whatever that entails, I can hit.
That makes complete sense to me. Yeah. Don't talk shit. Yeah. Don't tell anybody about what you want to do. Just do what they want you to do.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, he asked me who the coordinator was. I was like, it's Lynn Oden. And he was like, okay, cool. He was like, all right. He's like, yeah, I know Lynn. And then so I go there, and I'm sitting there waiting, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, I feel like a fish out of water because, like, there's moving parts. I'm like, I might be in the way. But then I saw Lynn with the pad. I was like, okay, that's got to be the coordinator. I know that look.
Right,
so
the person with the pads.
He's like, yeah, yep. You see someone carrying some pads. It's a good chance it's the coordinator. So
right.
I'm like, okay, cool. He's like, yeah, man, just have a seat. And I'll be right with you. I see another one of my buddies coming up, so they're talking, and then like there's people moving around. There's women in these short outfits walking around because I think they're about to do the studio scene. And so it's just a lot of going on. I'm just like sitting. I'm like, okay, I think I should. Yeah, okay, I'll hit the ground. That's all I tell him. I'll just hit the ground. But I could hear him talking about pre-vises, and I could hear him saying something about other stuff. And so I say that to say sometimes it's good to say what you're capable of. And
right.
Even though you like you could say, hey, I can hit the ground for you, but I also know how to shoot a pre-vis. I also know how to
right.
edit if you ever need that, because a lot of these guys, they're not just doing one thing anymore. So it's kind of cool
no,
to have that in your toolbox.
Yeah, people these days are doing a multi-function of works, you know,
yeah.
editing,
yeah.
writing, directing, producing,
yep.
stunt
yeah.
work, which is why I want to talk to people like yourself, because a lot of times I want to ask you, you know, what made you who you are, but also how do you handle the pressure, depression, and what have you, which we'll get along to mm-hmm. later on, which is incredibly important
yeah.
to these brand new artists that are coming up, because they always hear
yeah.
about, like, you know, people always ask them, like, give some great advice to these people. But also, I think something to keep in mind is mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you
yeah.
keep mentally
oh,
healthy
man.
In an environment like this? And let's get into that a little bit later on. But you,
sure.
so you get into that stunt work, and you start talking to people, and it's really going well for you. So the communication is important. Would you say that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And being honest, I think a lot of times people will fake the funk and kind of fudge a little bit.
Oh,
and,
really?
And I get it. In the acting sense, there's that. I'm an actor, of course. I can do anything.
Yeah, fake it till I make it.
You give me a right, or you put a guitar in my hand. Of course, I can play something because I'm an actor. Like, I get that part, which
mm-hmm.
is great and fine. But you can't necessarily do that with stunts. Like, it's either you can or you can't. It's
right.
very, like, if you say you're a specialist, like, your specialist is kicking, you have to be able to kick. Like, there's
right.
no, there's no like, saying you can do it and then you get on the set and you can't. Like, there's no stuntman for the stuntman.
Would you say the reaction time is differently now compared to how it used to be, like, in the 1980s, to where you could kind of fool people in casting and what have you with what you don't can't. But since there's so many things like Disney Plus, Amazon,
mm-hmm.
all these different signs,
mm-hmm.
media is just moving so fast. I don't think you can lie and get away with it
environment. No, you can't. And that's the thing. Like, as soon as you say something, now they're like looking you up. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've casted all five of these movies. And you're like, oh, really? Let me IMDb you real quick. I've done that plenty of times. Somebody be talking to me and be like, oh, yeah, but you have no star rating. So, you definitely now, I think it's very hard to fake the funk or lie. Maybe back then, like, you could do it a lot easier. But now, yes, it's a bad thing.
I remember my first job.
I worked
in locations, and you faked until you made it. We didn't have YouTube. I didn't even know what my job was, literally, till the fourth job. Like, I literally had to study on the job. It was very strange.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, mm-hmm. you don't have that at all. Like, if you want to find out what to do, you find out for some 5-year-old on YouTube. I mean, literally,
that's
I
true.
Found some guys to help me edit. What was my editing program right there? Adobe Premiere. Some 15-year-old.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yep.
So you worked on
special effects and all that,
right? After Effects, all that stuff. So you worked on 6 Feet Down Under on the show that I created along with Guy Grundy and Sean Piccinino. Did you have fun doing that?
Yeah, actually, I did. Sean's a great guy. You know, it was a great experience. It's funny because it was Tatiana that hit me up about it, and I met her on a set while working for Garrett Warren on his when it was his directing debut for Mortal Kombat, and I saw her.
Oh yes.
Reaching for a cookie, and I was like, "Hey, can I have those cookies?" She said, "Could you get me a cookie?" And I was like, "Got a cookie," and we just from there, we just had a good relationship, and I met Sean, and, you know, and I love Sean. Like, he had, he was like, kick him in the face, you're going to do this, and he made it look so brutal, and I didn't have to do nearly as much. He's, that just shows you how skilled he is and what he does.
Right.
So, yeah, it was great. I had a lot of fun on this.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun having you on the set. It was really great. Tatiana is an amazing human being. I mean, she's one of those people that connects a lot of people together in a very strange way. But she's
very true.
Yeah, I've had her on the show a couple of days ago, or a couple of weeks ago, excuse me. And she's an amazing human being. So tell me more about what's going on, because you've been in Orville. You've been in The Mandalorian. I don't want to get to The Mandalorian yet because that'll drive me crazy. But have you been watching The Mandalorian?
Yes, I have.
And please, Maybe God, tell me, that. tell me how you feel about the show so far. I mean, Deborah Chow. I got to tell you, Deborah Chow, the director, is a miracle worker, and that woman is
a
miracle.
She was great. It was so awesome.
You worked with Deborah.
Like, I got to meet her.
Yeah, was that the episode you worked with her on?
Well, yeah, she worked on a couple of the episodes I worked on, and, you know, just her energy, she was very peaceful. Shout out to Ryan Watson, because he's the one who brought me in. He's an amazing fight coordinator, stunt coordinator. He's a beast.
He's a beast.
So, yeah, it was a
he
great
is
experience.
A beast.
It was a great. I enjoy the show, actually, a lot. You know, I feel it's refreshing. You know, it definitely fits the medium. And, you know,
right.
I like the fact that they give you something old, and then at the same time, they still give you something new. Because, like, the fights on there are, like, so high energy and so fun.
Right.
And, you know, you're trying different stuff with the flamethrower and all that other stuff. Like, it's so much fun. It's so much fun.
I rarely found a show since Fringe and Lost. There haven't been a lot of shows that kind of catch me off guard and make me think about the content and the people involved and what's behind them. This is the one show that really caught me off guard and really made me think about, like, this is really great work. This is fantastic work.
Yeah, it is. Like, you know, I think even when I would hear Jon Favreau talk on set, like, just, you know, he was very cool with, you know, giving suggestions and, you know, letting directors and letting people.
Oh, I just see right now that you're in both Deborah Chow's episodes 3 and 7. So you were in Deborah Chow's 2 episodes, the 2 best episodes on Mandalorian. That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a great experience, and it was surreal. Like, I had moments where I got to, you know, be the double for Carl Weathers, so that was amazing in itself.
Get
great
out
guy.
Of here.
Yeah, it was
funny.
They even gave me a little nickname on set. They were like, yeah, Carl Jr. Like, you know what? I like it. Let's roll it.
I love it.
Yeah, he was great.
I love it. Carl Weathers is the all-time best.
Yes, he was. He was so cool, and, like, he just knew what he wanted, and, you know, he was just – he had great energy, and we talked about some things. And so, like, I would do, like, pickup shots for them, and – I got a moment where I got to pick up the baby Yoda, and that was just so
get
out
of here.
Surreal.
Wow.
I couldn't. Yeah, that was probably my moment where I was like, I can't believe this is happening. This
right.
Is, you know, you're on this set that you can't explain because it's not like anything you've seen before. And you're just like, this is just me and you, buddy. And it was a great moment. It was a great moment. Great show.
Wow. So how was Deborah Chow the time you were working with her?
She was so cool. She was very cool. You know, like, she talked to me because it was like, again, when you're doubling, you want to make sure you're doing what the other actor's doing. And if they bring you on set first to walk it or whatever, just to kind of see, because there's certain actions and stuff going on, you really try to make sure you embrace what the character is and not try to do your own thing. So when she would talk to me, I would definitely take in what she was giving me, and then, you know, in the surroundings, and I would even ask, you know, Carl was like, hey, so what are you thinking here?
Right.
What are you doing here? So I don't overstep my bounds. I want to definitely play it to what you're doing,
right?
You know, and then follow what you're doing. Like, what would your thought be here? Like, you know, on episode 3, you know, how do you draw? How do you move? Like, how do you hold the gun?
Wow,
like,
so you're getting very experienced advice. I mean, very fast from somebody who's been in the business for a very long time and worked with some of the greatest actors in the world.
Yeah. I told him. I even told him. I was like, you know, my parents used to play your movies, And, you know, I'd get in fights in school, and I'd use some of your quotes. And then he would laugh. And it was like, yeah.
Dylan, you son of a gun.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite one was, now you done pissed me off. Like, that, you know, that he'd be losing, and then he'd all of a sudden, I think it was called Action Jackson, because my parents owned a comic book store. So in that comic book store, they had movie rentals. And so, yeah, and DVD classics and stuff. And so I remember her playing it. I was like, what is this? And who's this dude who just flipped over a cab? So, you know, we're talking and laughing. And I was like, you have some of the most iconic deaths in movie history.
Right.
You know, he's like, yeah, I'm done dying. I ain't dying no more. So it was fun. It was a great experience hearing him talk.
Yeah, well, he's alive in the show now. I mean, Baby Yoda saved his life, so that was pretty fantastic. And I got to tell you, you know, 3 and 7 are the best, are right now the best episodes. And we can't wait for episode 8 that's going to land next Friday/Thursday when we find out what's going to happen after what happened in the cliffhanger of 7. Are you going to be in 8? Because you obviously didn't put that in your IMDb.
Yeah, no, you know what? And now IMDb is kind of tricky sometimes when you try to do stuff. That's why I let the professionals work that sometimes. I'm like, how do I navigate through this? Not word this correctly. But to answer your question, I'm not exactly sure. It's weird because the stuff that I worked on, I didn't realize how vast everything was until I saw the show myself. I was like, wow, they did all that.
Really?
Wow, this is
So they did a lot of it in parts, just like Avengers Endgame. So they put you in parts.
Yeah, you have no idea. And they're so secretive. Mickey has made sure you don't know anything. Like, you might get half a page. I remember, like, you get like a piece of a page. And like,
I'll be honest. There's nothing wrong with that. There's so many spoilers out these days. I have nothing wrong with being ignorant to a subject until I go in there and I see Baby Yoda and I fall in love.
There you go. It's like you know, it's like going on a Bumble date. You just never know. Just, you know, swipe right. Hopefully you get there.
Like a Bumble date.
Catfish. Yeah.
It'd be interesting if you met Baby Yoda during a Bumble date.
Yeah, like I thought little Jawa was going to be here, but you'll do.
But you'll do. You're 50 years old, or you're a little older than I thought you'd be.
but you're seasoned. You're seasoned with the Force.
But you worked as well on Orville, and Orville is a fantastic show based on the other movie. What was the name of that movie that was spoof on Star Trek? It was a spoof on Star Trek. What was it? Galaxy Quest. That's right. One of the greatest movies of all time. So when I look at Orville, I see it as kind of like a cross in between, because it does take itself seriously sometimes. So how was it like being on Orville?
Now that's an interesting story. I remember I first watched the first couple of episodes of the Orville, and I was thinking, okay, this is Seth MacFarlane. I thought it was going to be really funny and like Family Guy-ish. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy this. And then all of a sudden I started watching and started getting invested. And I'm like, wow, this is really good. It's like really well written. You know, the character, they don't go too far with the comedy. They give just enough to be original. And then but it kind of reminded me of like Star Trek, like Next Generation. It's like, that was the one that I watched growing up. So I remember saying, I was like, I want to be on this show. And I said, I wanted to start playing more characters where I'm in prosthetics, I'm more of an alien hybrid, like all that type of stuff. That's this type of stuff I want to be in. And I'm on set and I'm in this creature outfit, and I get a text, and I look and I missed it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's from Tim. And he's like, hey, I would like to have you on the Orville. And I'm like, oh snap. I was like, I'm on set. My bad. I want to get with you. And he's like, I was on set too. LOL. He's like, look forward to working with you. And so when they put me in the thing and they put me in the clothes and they put this thing on my face and I become a Mocklin, it was one of the greatest experiences ever. I'm like, this is great. This is awesome. I don't want to get out of this. Everybody's like, you need a breather? No, I'm good. The only time I took it off or even made any complaint was when we did a gag where I get shot and we're rustling and tussling on the ground and I get dirt in my eye, and I was like, I need to take it off because I can't see. That was the only time I took it off. Other than that, I stayed in character. It was just so much fun being on that show. And it was like, you speak it, you have it, you say it, and you stay with it. And, you know, God, again, has been my best agent. I got to work on that show.
That team is That team is hilarious. I mean, they've won. So, I mean, off board of what they've done on Orville, they won so many Emmys, so many different Tonys. The creators of what a lot of different awards. How did it feel being part of that kind of team of people that have been so successful?
You know what I think was so successful, and this is probably the shout out to Seth MacFarlane's genius, is that he brought people from Star Trek. I remember seeing the guy who played William Riker helping directing. Yeah, and you know, like he was on set, so it was like you had the essence of Star Trek on this show. And I was like, because I was always wondering when I would watch it, it's like, why does it feel like I'm watching like a different version of Star Trek, like Generations, like, but it's its own thing. And I feel like because he was smart enough to incorporate, like, the guy who played Data is playing one of the characters, and you know, he found ways to incorporate writers and people who played on that show who really loved that show, and then to have it on his, it's like it's like mixing two things together. You're gonna get, you know, a unique experience, and I think that's why it does so well. It translates so well with other people because it's not like some campy, cheesy. It's not like Galaxy Quest where it's like really flat. It's like more comedic. It has more of a grounding to it. You know, a lot of the issues they talk about.
Yeah, you know, we're about to get into Homeland right now, but you're obviously working with some like incredibly top tier players out there in the world. You know, and I hear you're totally blessed, not lucky, but blessed. And the one thing,
that's
the one,
really what it is.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, Lucky's meeting a pretty girl at a party, bro. Let's just be completely clear about that. You know, you being blessed is whatever creator you believe in directing you in the direction that you should be in, which is obviously what's happening to you. But let me ask you a question. You know, I hear a lot of things for so many different people on what it takes to make it in Hollywood. But the one thing I'm hearing from you is communication. Communication and also enjoyment, because it seems like you really enjoy what you do.
I do. I wake up and, you know, they're like, you're going to be in this thing all day. I don't care. I'm like, this is what I signed up for. So, you know, I enjoy it. It's like I could be doing anything and I chose this. And you know, it's like when you choose something and you want it, it's like the pathways, things will open up for you if this is what you really want. So,
do you feel like you chose it, or do you feel like it chose you? Which one do you really feel?
I really feel like, you know what? I feel like both, because you know the thing is, my mom was a creative. She, her and my dad owned a comic book business, and you know, like again, in that business, we learned
that sounds
about
that sounds like heaven, by the way.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. To be a kid and then your mom just bought two PlayStations or two Nintendos and Super Nintendos,
like,
and you have all these different, you got like 75 games here that, you know, and two of each, you got to play each game.
I would get a tattoo that literally said, God bless America, based purely on that experience alone. I'm telling you right now,
that
like this is the best country in the world.
it was great. I mean, my mom has stories like where she met Stan Lee, and she was like, Stan Lee, because she was like the only black woman in this area at this comic book convention. And, you know, and like people like, you really enjoy comics. Like, she knew her stuff. Like she knew, you know, I'm rapping and putting books in Mylars and learning about cataloging, and Wizard is the thing that tells you how much your comic book is worth or your baseball card is worth. Like I remember all those things and being surrounded in in that creative environment. So it's like I was brought up that way, and you know, to watch my parents do it, you know, to that degree, and then it's like, okay, well, I want to do this, and then it's like it's being embraced, and then all of a sudden I put my faith behind it. It was like, this is where I belong. I want it.
So the decisions that you made in your life were embraced. I mean, based purely on the fact that your parents were creatives, right?
Yeah. It really helped. You know, and they were the type where you could try something. Like if you try something, you may not like it, but you have to ride it out to the end of the semester or the end of the season. Like you couldn't just like I learned about ballet and you know, tap and
love
I played
ballet.
The violin. You know, and and it's crazy because like in especially within like our culture, like because we live like in the suburbs, so like you know, my family members back home in like Detroit and stuff, they would like you know, crack jokes on us and be like, well, you know, they're these nerds and these book kids, they're not very street smart, whatever, whatever.
Right.
And so we had to learn how to play in both genres and or both cities and have those experiences and cultivate and make them our own. And it was a great experience, man.
So you're born in Michigan, and your parents mm-hmm. have a comic book store in Michigan, mm-hmm. I'm supposing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just surrounded by creatives, just people who are telling you stories, and everything is about a story or a different tale. Yeah. Also, quantum mechanics. Let's just be honest with each other, because when you look at comic books, they're always about alternate realities and the mistakes you make or the creative. So it's always a counterbalance there. I can't see how that could be wrong. That's such an amazing upbringing there. So how do you and your family feel now about the fact that you're like in the Mandalorian and things like
happy.
That? And because there's Orville
they're
comic
happy.
Books
they're
too.
Happy. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, well, my mom, she passed away. Unfortunately, she's seeing it from a different standpoint.
Right.
My father, he's very happy. You know, because again, me and my other brother. We, you know, we're both doing our thing in film and television.
Oh.
He's like, one minute he's seeing, you know, me playing this creature, and the next minute he's seeing his son, his other son, Chris J, arresting Miss Piggy, you know, on the Muppets. You know, so it's like, you know, we're out here, we're doing it. Yeah, it's just crazy. Like, I have an amazing family. Like, it's great. It's such a great feeling, and they love it. And
Do you feel any of the struggle in America right now with the, you know, I don't want to talk politics too much, but when you talk about you look at the way the world is right now, about how maybe the Academy Awards don't want to give awards to stunt men, which I would say is preposterous. How do you feel about concepts like that?
You know, that's an interesting conversation, and I my thoughts is this. I mean, I get why, you know, they don't want to do it. They're, because, again, that it gives away the mystique. Because then it basically says the act, especially when you have certain actors, not all of them, but there are some that don't give the credit to the other person. They're like, I did everything. This is me. You know, when you watch the movie or whatever that person did, that weird gag or that move, that might not have been that person. And so to give that up, to share that power, to say, and you have to be humble enough to say, hey, this was us. This wasn't a me. This is a we thing. That changes things. And especially at that level, because, again, the whole thing is to sell the ticket of the art of the actor or the actress. So when you have that taken away where it's like, well, we did this, it kind of messes with your bargaining power. That might change things a little bit. You know, that could open up wound can of worms. But I do see the point in giving props and giving credit where credit is due, because you got people that are sacrificing their lives and they don't get any credit. There's no acknowledgement. It's like they're unsung hero, but you don't even know that they did it.
Right.
Unless the actor or actress says, oh, well, shout out to like Anthony Mackie. He's good for shouting out Aaron Tony. Like Aaron Tony did that. Keanu Reeves is good for saying Jackson did that, you know, but not everyone wants to give that up. Some people want to give the mystique that I did everything.
Sure. Absolutely. So do you think there should be an award for people who do stunts?
Yeah, I think there should be some type of acknowledgement. Because we do have the Taurus Awards, which is great.
The Taurus Awards, you know, are fantastic. I really enjoy them.
It is. It's a fun festive time if you've ever been. Like, the food is on point. The drinks are amazing. The energy is always fun. And it's like a family reunion for
it
the
is.
Most part.
It is. Really nice.
You know? It's like, hey, everybody, we can finally get together because we're all over the world doing these films. But I definitely feel like at least there should be some way of acknowledgement to, you know, to the stunt community on that level, because it should be, because everyone else get acknowledged on that level.
Right.
It should be as well. Just somehow. They just got to figure it out in a way where where obviously it works, but I definitely think they should.
Well, you know, the Taurus Awards are coming up pretty soon. I hope I see you there. I'll be there myself.
Yeah,
I hope we have some fun. We'll eat some, like, little tiny sliders together or something like that.
There we go. Sliders and one of those mixed drinks with the Red Bull.
The Red Bull drinks. I got to tell you, I never drank Red Bull, but Red Bull vodka drinks from the Taurus Awards were amazing.
Man, those were good times. Those some good times, you know. You see, and then you see everybody break dance or something that in the dress, an outfit. I've seen this whole movie. I'm impressed.
Well,
I'm
like, what's interesting is you're watching people at the, like, their peak specimen levels, you know, trying to like do like the best stuff in very tight outfits. I'll be honest, because they want to show off how good looking they are, but it's very tough to dance.
Especially some of the dance. There's not been a year I haven't seen somebody split their pants at least once. Because a lot of the stunt performers, they come from the breakdance era. So you see somebody do this move, and then they get down on the ground, and they have one too many drinks, and they split, and you're like, ooh.
I saw Tammy Barry dance one time, and I swear to God, I thought she was gonna knock somebody out.
That's funny.
Yeah, we were just bumming. those are fantastic times. We're gonna have more times like that as well. I really think one of the issues though in the stunt organizational work is that the Me Too movement quite hasn't lent into that world. One of the things that I heard at the Torres Awards, and I'll tell you something that, you know, our audience right now that's listening, and thank you for listening in today at Cinema Files Radio, hosted by me, and thank God we have Gene Freeman here. But, you know,
thank you for
asking. God bless you, and thank you for being here. But one thing that I definitely heard in front of my face was that one stunt woman asked another man, "Do you mind if I give you a call?" And he goes, "As long as it's kosher." And it's the first time I've ever heard anybody tell a woman, like, don't call me for anything else but professional wisdom. And I'll be honest, there is not a lot of jobs that I think that there's no cinematography jobs I've ever been part of, location, directing, producing. Mm-hmm. There's never been work that somebody's ever said anything like that to me or anybody that I know of. Do you think that's purely a stunt thing? Do you think the stunt world is kind of a little backwards, or what's going on?
I feel like within the stunt community, I feel like sometimes I feel like women have it very hard in the sense of being taken seriously without the BS sometimes. But then you have, on the flip side of that, you have those that know what they have and they have no problem using that to their advantage. That's the problem you have. I think that's the bigger problem sometimes.
It does feel like the old West. There's very the old West. Yeah. It's like one way or another. It depends on how I can take abuse of you. But, you know, that can only last so long before somebody gets, like, you know, annexed.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. And again, I think that's the hard part, too, is, like, you have someone who's like, hey, I just want to call you. And, you know, and we could talk about this project and that.
Yeah.
And they really are on some culture stuff. But then you have those who are like, you know what? Yeah, I don't mind to give you that little dinner and that little kiss on the cheek, because that's going to open the door for me. Yeah, I'll give you that extra 30-second hug, even though I don't want to. But, you know, this could open the door for me. So,
you know,
we have two sides.
I'm so insanely naive to think that, you know, I thought 4 years ago we destroyed race. I thought 4 years ago we destroyed racism, you know, I just made you laugh too, bro.
I'm gonna spill my coffee.
I thought we destroyed certain aspects of like social society, but it doesn't, you know, with the Me Too movement, I thought people were on check. People were on balance. People were more careful about what they were going to say, but no. In certain avenues, people are absolutely, on the dark side.
Not at all. Yeah, I mean, because there's some things that I deal with on set, and I just, and luckily, again, I was blessed to have two parents that would explain to me it's bigger than you, and I would get stuff like, you know, you're representing your whole race, and I still deal with that now, where I might handle a situation where.
So you had that conversation. So your family had the conversation with you that you're representing your entire culture?
When you're like 6 years old and you're about to go into class, she's like, I want you to know you represent your whole race. I'm like, okay, that's a lot of pressure for a six-year-old. But I get why she had to tell me, because we moved to a predominantly white neighborhood. So what she was saying was you're their go-to. They've never seen, they've never experienced So whatever
you'll be their first representation.
Right. Or either you're going to break myths or you're going to perpetuate stereotypes. Either way,
right.
Just know that you're the one that's. And I feel like it's the same thing in certain fashions with the women in the community. Like, you're a representation of the next woman. And it sucks that
so
you're going to be the
type
of person.
That you, I got to be honest. That's so strange that you had to go through that. That's horrific.
I still go through it. Like,
of course you do.
But as a child,
you don't want children to go through those aspects. As adults, we all have to face up to reality.
Yeah.
the world really is racist. We have to just face facts.
Yeah.
And we have to fix things along the way.
Even as a kid, the kid would say, "Where's his tail?" Like, what?
What does that mean?
That stuff as a kid.
Really?
Because they were referring to me as a monkey. Yeah, they were like, we were at the grocery store. My mom's walking me where Myers. I remember where Myers, and the kid asked where my tail was.
Welcome to Michigan. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in Michigan. Welcome to Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, even when I lived in L.A., I would get questions asked you know those words? Oh, you speak so well. I'm like, yeah, I have an education. Yes, I know words. If I don't know something, I'll ask. But, I'll get that sometimes. They'll say something, and they'll look and see, okay, validation. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means? Yes, I know what that means. Or you like big butts. You must know what that means. You must know about the big butt movement. What do you think? I don't have no idea. I don't know.
I had a girl come up to me at a film festival and do this kind of rhyme that she's both black and white, and she started going on the thing, and I'm like, may I ask you a question? Is there a reason why you just told me that? She was, well, 99% of people, and she was in Arizona. She was 99% of people asking me this question. And I'm like, yeah, you're not from LA, so we would never ask that question. Yeah, this is not a question that is appropriate.
Right.
And there's more of you in LA than there's not. So nobody would ask you that question unless you just perpetuated yourself.
Right.
You have to stop
that. Exactly. And it's hard too, because you got to find. That's why I do more listening than talking sometimes, just to kind of get a gauge of where I'm at, what I'm into. And, sometimes I look at it as a teaching moment, when the guy wanted to pitch a show and they were like, well, we want to use you because we don't feel like we can be authentic talking about hip hop, because we don't do the gold chains and da 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 da. And when he went down his list of what he thought was on authenticity, I was like, well, I don't have gold chains. I don't do I don't do all that stuff anyway, but I do enjoy music and I do enjoy the culture. So it was like breaking those myths and those stereotypes, and I feel like you got to do it by a case by case basis instead of it being a representation of all. Oh, well, he must do it too, or she must do it too. You should really listen to that person and see where they're at with it. Hopefully we'll get to that point.
So as you were, I know we will. I mean, I don't think there's anything we as a people cannot overcome. I think sometimes we overestimate ourselves. I think we think that we're further than we are, and we prove ourselves wrong, and we're disappointed by ourselves. But I think in the very end, I think we love what we have, and I don't think we want to give it up. I'll be honest. I think this is where life should be and just progress from this point forward. I think we're going through a tough time in our lives right now. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Let me ask you a question. You know, from your family that they obviously went through tough times owning a comic book store and doing things in the entertainment business, because that's going to create problems. Do you feel like some of their woes helped you to get over some of the future woes that you were going to have in the entertainment business?
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, for sure. One of the things that, my parents were very adamant about was education. They wanted us to understand and feel comfortable in these environments. You're going to have to work harder. My mom, my dad, they worked extremely hard to get what they had, even just, to be in the neighborhood they lived in. They had to sacrifice so much. My father worked the same job working at the post office and working for the government, and those the only two jobs he kept working those. And then, my mom, she was like, we want to make sure you guys have a vocabulary. She's like, you're going to be big on that. 'Cause she told me a time when she went on a date And the guy said, you know, you're so beautiful and loquacious. And she was like, so you're saying I'm beautiful, loud, and obnoxious. And he looked and he was stunned because he didn't expect her to know that. Yeah, 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 exactly. She's like, oh, no, never again. Like, no. Yeah, so she's like, yeah.
So your mother is mother's educated and throws it in people's face without a doubt.
You know, yeah, especially when you're he put her on the,
he tried to sleeve her over and she just pushed him under the side. Wow.
Yeah.
Loquacious.
She said, that's the thing you're going to have to worry about. She's like, it's not going to be the blatant, someone just coming at you with mean intent. It's the smile. It's going to be,
right.
Oh, let me just pet you on your head. Oh, let me just,
thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be the smile with the deception behind it.
I'm glad that it's still taught, man, because it really is that smiley little son of a gun who really has evil intent. That is the worst kind of monsters that we have. The people who speak their truth and say their truth, thank you. I know what you look like now.
Yeah.
You want to be known.
Exactly.
I almost support you. But the people who hide themselves, those are the ones I'm like, no, I don't like this.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. If you really feel away, stay away, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I think that's why when I watch like a Quentin Tarantino film and they have like the N-word all throughout it, it doesn't bother me as much because it's right in my face and I know what it is. I've seen that person before.
That's a weird subject. You know, with Pulp Fiction, you know, I saw that and Quentin Tarantino playing the extra kept on using the N-word, you know, talking about his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see in a flashback, you know, if she catches up to him, she's black herself. And I always gave him that excuse of like, well, if you're invited to the barbecue, then you know, you're going to say what you want to say without being murdered. I mean, this guy's an assigned killer. He's obviously not killing you, so you're allowed to say that word. But I remember listening to Spike Lee and Quentin Tarantino on Howard Stern fighting about who is the most racist.
Yeah, I mean,
have you ever heard those conversations ever before?
I've heard some of those. Yeah, I've heard some of those conversations. Like, you know, I get it. I totally understand it.
I understand it from both sources. Yeah, I understand it from both sources. But in reality, they really influence us into our next films. So you worked on let's go back to your other stuff. You worked on Homeland.
Okay.
So how was that like? Because Homeland is reaching its end now. So you're hitting the end quarters now.
Well, you know, that was a lot of fun. That was definitely on the stunt side of things. Shout out to Mickey G, a great coordinator, you know, super funny and real chill guy. He hit me up actually through Stunt Availability. Thank you, Stunt.
Nice.
Thank you, Stunt Phone. Thank you. Thank you, Stunt Phone. You know, so that was a great experience. It was a Big Bear. You know, the place was beautiful. It was hard to breathe. I was saying,
wow.
That's probably the hardest job I've had so far because there was no air and they
were
running up the side of a mountain. Yeah. was not acclimated day one. They were like, so we're just going to walk through and we're going to, and you guys are going to be on the side of the mountain. There's going to be explosions here, gunfire here, blah, blah, blah. And someone was like, the director was like, yeah, and I think Gene's going to have the hardest part. And I was like, the hardest part? I thought I was just running up the mountain with the hardest part. And they're like, yeah, he's going to get shot, and he should go over the log. And I'm like, go over the log? Okay. So, like, you know, and then once you got to go over this log, it's not like I'm going to stop. I'm going to keep rolling. So to backtrack a little bit, the night before I'm getting ready to leave to Big Bear to go to the Homeland, someone stole my bag out of my car.
Get out of here.
All my stunt gear is gone. Yeah, so
all my
stunt gear is gone. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do about this. And I'm not really big for venting on social media, but I just said, whoever stole my bag, I hope you really needed it, but it sucks because I'm supposed to go work tomorrow. And the stunt community just flourished and came in overflow. And thank God for Matt Merchant. He
really
borrowed his bag. Yeah, like people were hitting me up left and right, and the support was just amazing. Like I almost cried because
That's awesome.
It was like to have that many people reach out and then just you know, not just give words of comfort, but action. And I'm big on, if I'm going to bring something up, it's because hopefully something can happen. As
right.
opposed to, oh, I'll just pray for you. I'll just pat you on the back, or you know, rub some crystals and hope
yeah.
you'll be okay.
Yeah, I'll pray for you, man. It's like, please don't pray for me. Please help me out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, or I want to listen to. So, like, that happened. And so I find out what the gag I'm supposed to be doing. And, I mean, the terrain is crazy. The atmosphere is crazy. And again, this is thank God to Chad Stahowski and his team, because for a little bit I was training at 87 and I was learning jiu-jitsu from Hugh Fitzgerald. He's my professor. And those drills saved me on that job.
You know, I was going to ask you that. There is no doubt in my mind that you have a martial art background. But, you know, I was going to ask you, first of all, who's trained you? Who is your master? Second of all, it sounds like a very kung fu movie, right? Second of all is, how has it added to your life as a creative?
Okay. So I feel really weird claiming a martial artist at all. That's just me. I've always
who have been your inspirations or people who have been mentors in your life? Just people you've trained with, things like that.
Yeah, I've trained with Mark. I can't think of his last name right now, which is, I feel really bad about that. But
more about him.
Mark has been great. His class, he would open it up at Gymnastic Olympica, and we would go over stacking punches and kicks. And you know, and really, and having intent behind your fist.
Right.
Then who else? Terry Tahini. He was great. Zedric Harris. I took a few of his courses. I took some wire work from Tim Storm. Then I went to Wire Fighters. They've been great. Chris Young and his group of people. I would say from the jiu-jitsu standpoint, Hugh Fitzgerald is my professor. Like, that's probably the one place that I actually claim, that I'm learning martial arts. And then Chad Stahowski and his group, he opens up 87. I was blessed to be able to train there for a little bit, but then I got really booked with work. So, like, the opening time to go train there, I'm on set, so I wasn't able to stay in it as much. But while I was there, that was where they would go over judo, jiu-jitsu, different arm techniques,
right.
and how to fall, and saving yourself. So a lot of those mechanics, and then what helped me was, because a lot of people already have a martial arts background. I'm just starting in certain, because I just said, like, 2 years ago, I was like, I want to be a fight guy. So, like, literally within a 2-year span, I've been learning more of the timing and the dance of that. And so when he said, you know, fight choreography is a dance, that went off in my brain, like, oh. He's like, you know, work on the things that you're good at. He's like, you need to hit the ground. He's like, you know, understanding this. He's like, the only way to fake being good is being good. He's like,
right.
You know, he's like my guys, you know, they're not sitting at crappy telling their stories. They're learning all the fights. They're learning not just
right.
their fight, but the other person's fight. And I thought about that and that helped me on the Homeland thing again, because when I had an opportunity to stay in my trailer, because they were like, you have to take this crane and the ski lift all the way up, and I don't like unnecessary heights. So, you know, but I was like, dang it, they're on set. And I was like, they said I don't have to go up there, but I was like, I thought about what he said. He was like, my guys, we're there. And so I was like, well, I need to be there too. Even if they don't need me, they just need to know my presence is there.
Right.
So I hop on the ski lift that I've never been on before, and I'm going up this thing, and I'm like, I'm ready to work, and we didn't do anything for like 6 hours. But the you know, but the gag that I had to do when I'm getting shot, and I was like, okay, air awareness to do this and to do that, and to hit the ground, and okay, and figure out how I'm not gonna roll into this barrage of broken twigs and logs and impale myself, you know, because once you're going, especially when everything is like ready, 3, 2, 1, go, you know, you're
right.
like. Adrenaline's pumped, you know, you got to stay focused, you got to hit the marks. So I'm listening to like people like on the 8711 podcast, they were talking about, you know, I think his name was Jackson. He was like, you know, when you get to a certain level, he's like, you can't mess up. You can't mess up. You have to really know your stuff. And So these type of people, like from near or far, I'm listening to and taking that into consideration as I'm training, as I'm learning these different moves and different techniques. And I'm thinking about what I need to do on the day. And I'm like, okay, so I remember going over and then accelerating here, and then you hit the mark and let momentum take you. So luckily I was blessed to be in that course, or that they opened their doors at that time, because I probably wouldn't have did the job as well as I did it, because they were like, dude, it looked like you gave us a 10. All we wanted was like a 5 or a 6. And I didn't feel anything. Like, it was great. It was like, it just looked like I did more than what I needed to, but I'm glad they were happy with it. And, you know, it saved me immensely. Like, these teachers that take their time out, Gio Carrera, you know, all these different guys that will take their time out, Khalid, and, you know, just even Ryan Watson. Like, I would go on set and I would ask a question like, hey, well, what, how do you do this? How do you do that? I see you got, you know, I see you got good hands. I see you guys are doing FUBA and learning different little moves here and there. And I would just practice. I would take my Kali sticks and I would work on stuff on set. And I would, you know, even on the Mandalorian, I'm bringing my sticks, and, you know, you got different people who are like specialists. And I'm like, well, this is like a class. We, you know, we got downtime. Instead of me just chilling and crafty, you know, let me ask you a question. And it's like being humble enough to listen and
right.
take in the information, as opposed to, I know everything. I always try to go in like a sponge, you know, let me
right.
go with a clean squeeze and let me absorb as much as you want to give me without the, I'm already doing this, so I don't need to know from you. No, like, I really want to humble myself and
right.
learn, you know. Even Jerry Marina, he's a, you know, a phenomenal stunt performer. Like, he's hard, but he's, you know, he's phenomenal. Like, he's great for a reason. And, you know, like, his work ethic, you know, training with, you know, lifting weights with this guy, and, you know, how they'll lift weights, go do judo from the lift weights from 6 to 7:30, then from 7:30 to 9, then from 9 to 11, then from 12 to 2 o'clock. You know, you just did all this training, you know.
Right.
It's like, that's what it takes to be a phenomenal. That's what it takes to be, you know, you want to do like Keanu Reeves, you want to be an action actor, then it's like, you got to put in the time like a surgeon. Like, I think Chad talked about that. He's like, you know, you guys want to do the fight, but you guys will just do kick drills and punch a bag. He's like, you got to film yourself doing fights. You got to film yourself doing it so you can see it. And he's like, you got to put in the hours, you got to put in the time. And so all these different people would say the same thing. You know, what's your
right.
fist saying? Are you just throwing a punch? Are you, what type of thug are you? Are you a henchman? Are you a specialist? You know, and all these things. So, like, I feel like for me, the thing that's been great is, I don't say I'm necessarily a martial artist, I'm more like, I say, like, I'm a sponge, movie foo, and I'm open. So I'm
movie
always,
foo. That makes a lot
open.
Of sense.
Yeah, because again, it's like, I've heard people say I'm this, and then when you see them, you're like, you can't be, because or you don't have to even say it. Like, I feel like, you know, like when you study martial arts, a lot of martial arts, they don't really say what they are unless they need to.
No.
You know, they just do their thing, you know.
At my experience level and my timing right now, I actually kind of laugh. I chuckle sometimes
mm-hmm.
when I hear people talk mm-hmm. because they're so ingratiated by themselves, by what rank they have. And I'm just like,
yep.
You're going to reach a level
yep.
of no rank, and all that stuff is going to mean nothing.
Yep. See? Yep. Exactly. And like, I've been taught on many classes, once you say you can do that thing or you're that thing, you're saying you're above average. So
right.
especially in the stunt community, like, that's one thing I liked about being an actor who can do stunts, is that I can play on both sides. But the one thing about the stunt performer, there is no stuntman for the stuntman. It's either you can or you can't. The actor, we can get
right.
you a stuntman. We can get you. We
right.
can find somebody who can drive the car, who can shoot the gun. You just got to deliver the line, as opposed to the stuntman. You hit that. You don't hit that mark. You know, either you're
right.
money yeah. or they're like, they'll replace you. That's a totally different pressure. And I was like, I want to play in that pressure. Like, I want to be able to deliver my lines, but I was like, I don't want to be that guy on set where you're like, dang, bro, you suck. Like, I don't want to be that guy. So,
you know
that's always been my goal.
I want to talk to my audience right now. You know, a lot of my guests have asked whether we need an hour or 2 hours. Why do I need this much time? We're almost in 2 hours right now. with my guest Gene Freeman right now. So it goes by really, really fast. And you might not think that you have a lot to say, but Gene Freeman has a lot to say. And it's worth listening to.
Thank you.
You know, I love talking to you, Gene. Let me ask you a very serious question here, which is, you know, sure. Depression is a very pertinent thing or a relevant thing in Hollywood. How do we get past that? I mean, how did you get past that yourself, or how are you dealing with that yourself in the world that you live in?
Oh man. You know what? I was in my car for 9 months. And during that time, I lost my family. I found out there were some truths and things that obviously it shattered my reality.
So you were homeless for 9 months in your car?
You know what's funny? I don't consider it homeless. I lived in my car.
Dude, listen, my friend. I was homeless for several years in my car, and it's homeless, motherfucker. I excuse me for my language there, and I'm going to take a cue from that one, because I'm going to be punished for that word right there. But I'm telling you something, that's homeless. So let's just be honest with each other. That's homeless.
Here's part of it, perception.
Yeah.
I never, because if I would have looked at it as homeless, when you think homeless, there's a lot of things that go with homeless. That just instantly
right.
You say it.
Weak.
And during my time,
stupid.
Weak. You're stupid. You made stupid decisions. You're not.
Right.
You're not worthy. You're so many things. And again, in conversation, like I had a friend who was talking on my phone. He was like, dude, you're homeless. He's like, da da da. I'm like, no, dude, I'm in my car. I was like, I'm in a mobile home. I own this.
Yeah.
I was like, I can go
yeah.
anywhere I want. I was like, you know, it was like my mindset. It was like, I can go anywhere I want. Like I would go to the gym. I do my regiment. I would book a job, and I'd do camera work and whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, I would sleep in my car. And then he was like, dude,
right.
He's like, but you're homeless. I was like, no, I'm not homeless. I was like, you're homeless. I was like, if your sister says, leave her house.
You sound exactly like me, man. That's exactly the way I talk to people for a year. It's like, I'm not homeless. You're homeless. You're the one living on the streets. I've got a car. And the truth is, you know, having a car is such a luxury. It is such a luxury. Wow.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, because I was downtown, and I was like, I don't feel safe over here. I don't like the energy over here. And then some said, then drive. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's right. I don't have to stay. I can drive. And I
can go anywhere you want.
And I went I was on Lancashire and in Magnolia. I'd be over in that area, and I would go to the gym.
Yeah.
The gym is right there. And at night. Okay.
No, I was in North Hollywood, and I was in North Hollywood near the Valhalla cemetery.
Oh,
that's where I would stay. Oh yeah, it's in Burbank.
Okay. See,
very very safe.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, I know it is.
Yeah.
And I would like lay down at night, and I would be playing like Joe Osteen. I'd play Eric Thomas. I would play Sylvester Stallone. I would be playing. All these people saying like,
pump you up,
how winners win. Yeah, it was like,
right.
You know, and then prior to that, I was in my word because I was, you know, previously married, and I was going through these hardships, and I'm like, I have to figure this out. Like, I don't know why we're
going through. Hold on a second. You went through a divorce, and that is what kind of set you up into this situation?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually, it came out of nowhere because I literally found out I'm in my car planning to, you know, go see the kids and do all this other stuff. I find out, oh, no, we're not together. This person's been cheating. I'm like, all this other stuff. I'm just like, whoa.
Are these your kids?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, she had a previous relationship. And so, yeah, so she had brought two kids into it. And I've always felt like, you know, the moment they were brought into my life, I was like, you guys are my kids. I don't care what anyone says. And so, that being said, I've always left it that way. Like, even though they weren't by my blood or any of that stuff, that didn't matter to me. Like, I'm the one that helped them, you know, potty train. I taught them the ABCs, 1, 2, 3s. I showed them how respect, love, honor.
No, you were a right father. You were a good, you were a good father is what you were.
You know, I would walk my kids to school. It's 3 miles away. I have one on my back, another one walking, and like, we got to get to the school. Like, I got you. Like,
and then
you know,
all of a sudden she's a cheater and she's like been doing something else.
Yeah. you know, just, you know, and to her, you know, life hits everybody different, you know.
Right,
it's
right.
It's all about what's inside of you and what drives you. Like, for her, you know, I could hear about the money and all this other stuff. And, you know, I'm listening to stuff saying, like, you could have all the money, but what if your parents, what if your kids don't know you? What if your significant
right.
other doesn't know you? What if there's
right.
that void that can't be filled with material things? So,
right.
you know, luckily I had all that stuff that was being built up inside of me. So when I was in my car, I didn't feel homeless. I didn't feel powerless. I didn't feel like it was the end. I was just like, okay, this is the situation. I'm going to build from this. It's not the end all be all for me, you know.
Right.
I have to keep that positivity in me. I have to keep speaking life in my situation.
Very important.
All while I'm in my, yeah. That, I think that's the one thing how to deal with depression when you're in those situations is that you have to keep reinforcing positive things. When those negative things pop up, as quick as they pop up, you have to nip them in the bud. You have to fight. Some of your friends are gonna say things to you like, you're in your car, and like he's like, dude, you're taking your computer to the coffee shop. Someone's gonna steal that from you. And I was like,
right.
no one's gonna steal that from me. And then he was like, yeah, man, someone's gonna steal that from you. He's like, you're gonna
nobody
and
stole
I was like,
that
dude.
From you.
I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm like 6'1", you know, I'm a big dude. Da da da. 6'1", no one's gonna take it from me. I was like, then if they try to, it would drop. He was like, no, man, that's not gonna work. I was like, you know what? I was like, stop speaking death over me. Like I had to
right.
literally come at them just as aggressively with that positivity and say, stop speaking that over me. But
right.
had I gave in, I, you know, then yeah, because as soon as I said that, I ended up meeting someone who worked on The Walking Dead. He needed to get something filmed, and it sounded sketchy, but I was like, you know what? God is my source. No weapon formed against me shall prosper. Yo, man, what do you need? I can shoot it. I can edit it. And I got paid. It helped me. I formed a relationship. And, you know, and it just goes to show sometimes you have to, you know, stick to your gun, stick to that positivity, like, and reinforce it. It's not an easy thing, but, you know, it was just an ongoing thing. And before I know it, I found a roommate. You know, I met the guy who I've been in the sauna with for over 3.5 months, gives me my first big SAG job. And he's also one of my best mentors to this day. And he always tells me, he's like, you know why I gave you that job? He's like, you weren't the best. You're not a martial artist. He's like, but you had the heart to get up and do it again, you know, and I've always been, my biggest thing is like, I want to let my name have greatness behind it. So when you speak it, it holds weight. When you speak Gene Freeman, you're like, this guy, that's a go-to guy. That guy's a
guy. I like what you're saying, because what you're saying is that there's a difference between truth and perception. You're homeless.
Right.
The truth is that you're okay. You're fine. You got a car. You're going to be okay. The perception is,
right.
woe is me. What's happening to me? Why me? Who
right.
can I blame?
Right. And I have no one to blame but myself. Because at the end of the day,
right.
you made the choices that you made. Whether
you
like it or not, these are your choices. You know, you picked
right.
who you want to be with. Now, how do you want to handle it? You can sit in your car and wallow. You can lay out on the grass. Like, there was people who it was weird too. Like, while I was in my car, who needed a place to stay, they
right.
stayed in my car. Like, I opened my car up to other people. So like, yeah, like I even at one point rented out my passenger seat, made some money. Like, so it was like, you know, I was like, this is like anything. I was like, I'm like Airbnb in my car right now. It was you know, my mindset was just different. Like, it was just like, this doesn't define me. I'm not gonna.
I'll be honest.
Situation.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never done anything like that in my entire life. It's incredible, isn't it?
Uber's interesting.
I know, right?
Yeah.
It's incredible the things that we go through in order to become the people we are today.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Like, I knew that I was going to be in entertainment. There's no question about that, because that was the choice I made. How all the other stuff transpired, that's just, you know, like I said, better choices that I could have made. But I knew I was going to be doing this. I knew I was going
right.
to be doing this. So,
well, you got,
you know,
some acting things coming up right now, some great
yeah.
pieces right now, like Play for Keeps,
yeah.
Type Z,
yep.
from makers
yep.
of Action Here, Free
yep.
for All. I mean, tell me about these projects. These are your acting jobs coming up. I want to hear about these.
Yeah. You know, so like one of the projects I got to play O.J. Simpson.
Now that's the question I want to ask you, because you're going to be playing O.J. Simpson.
that was interesting. I probably won't ever do it like that one, something like that again.
Yeah.
I think for me personally, because I feel like one reason I got into film is because I wanted to be in places where I could be things. And try different things, like be in a different world, be a different creature,
right.
Characters. You know,
sure.
I think when you're doing stuff based on a real life experience, like
right.
that someone died, that's a real death. Those are real
two people
deaths.
Died.
Real
yes,
911 calls. Yeah, two people died. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So it was like even being on set, like to be like the two kids that were they like, had to pretend to be my kids. Like it felt
oh
weird.
My god.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
I'm the guy that's gonna like, possibly be the killer. You know, it just you know. It just
that sounds,
the vibe was
it sounds
different.
Surreal when you say it out loud. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it did, and that's what it felt. I was like, hey, and then then she's playing her character, and she's looking at me with deaf eyes, and it was like, I was like, okay, is she in character right now, or is this just yeah, my breath smells a little different? Do I need to go to Crafty and get some gum? Like, I don't know what this is, but you know, that was
right.
a good experience. But I enjoyed it because at least I know what I liked and what I didn't like. You know,
right.
And I can make that choice going on further in my career, you know, as an actor. So, you know, but yeah, it was definitely hard, for sure. Cause like you're watching this stuff and then like learning the mannerisms, you're really looking at analyzing and, you know, cause you're trying to play it the best you can to that person, you know,
right.
That's another thing too. So it was just, you know,
let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question that might be a little controversial. Do you think there's limited work for African Americans that aren't like big stars right now?
That's an interesting question. I feel like
are there stories being made for African Americans? I mean, are there still being
there are
film?
Better
I mean,
stories being made now for sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm listening to you.
Well, yeah, I do feel like they are making better, more stories, you know, outside of, you know, the dude with the mixtape trying to get out the basement. And,
right.
You know, the slave, you know, the slave that wants to be free, you know, they are
right.
trying to make other stuff. You know, hopefully we can get to the point where it's not the token guy. He's only good enough up until a certain point. Then he has to die, you know, hopefully or like he'll have a major part, but then like they turn him into a creature. So it's like, you really don't get to
right.
see
right.
that person's journey. You get to,
like,
you know, you see this animated. Yeah.
Yeah. Like so, Enemy Mine or something like
kidding.
That. You know, I was wondering because, you know, even with the crossover and DC crossover, they were really questioning whether they bring over Black Lightning. And I was like, is that because it's like more of a, like an African American show, and that it doesn't bring in the same kind of squadron? It's kind of an odd question to ask. And what we would say is 2020, which is where the end of
right.
the decade now, right? So my question would be: is like, do you think that maybe has it opened up for us? Has it closed for us? How does it feel right now for you as an actor? Because I'm not an actor.
I feel like it's opening. I still do feel like there's a way to go, but I do feel like there are opening. There is things. There are other things you're starting to see, you know, choice wise when it comes to these roles. You know, like when Jordan Peele, like, you know, he can tell he's very into like the psychological thrillers and the horror. So,
he is, yes.
You know, and so you're starting to see those stories, which is really cool. You know, so I do start to see the changes. I do start to see the opening. It's just hopefully it'll get to a point where, you know, again, it won't even be a thought. It'll just be like, this
right.
is, you know, just the movie, you know, but
right,
right now it's getting there. There is some change because there's so many platforms and so many things that people are looking for.
God, there's,
you know,
so many channels right now. There are so
yeah.
many platforms, Disney Plus, Amazon, Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean, we got, you know, like Google's going
to
come out with something very soon. What are you looking forward to to the future of your career? What are you kind of holding out for? I mean, you've already done The Mandalorian and some fantastic things, but obviously
yeah.
acting seems to be your main gig. So
yeah,
what are you working for?
I'm working to be that next, like, I want that Indiana Jones. I want to be the guy that does those type of films, like the action adventure, sci-fi, fantasy. Like, I really play in those realms, and like I really see myself being on a Star Wars and being on a Star Trek, even, like, you know, playing those characters and having those prominent performances. Like, that's what I'm aiming for. So, like, that's what I'm looking for from this point on, is just stuff that really showcases that, or, you know, a Matrix, you know, a John Wick, where the characters are, like, a little more prominent, and you can see them doing stuff, and they're around for the next one.
It seems that what you love is the things that you grew up with, pop culture, things of relevance, things that you enjoy. Yep. It doesn't seem like you have a very specific motive other than to do what you enjoy.
Yeah, and my mom and my parents were really animated about being a trailblazer, like, because there isn't anyone really right now. I guess I would have said Will Smith, maybe, where he probably would have been the person that is in, you know, it's time, you know, pass the torch, because his son didn't want it. So, yeah, pass the torch, you know.
It's
time for someone to continue with the sci-fi, continue with those action events, the Wild West, I mean, a different version. But, you know, like Indiana Jones, Men in Black, you know, having, like, a Marvel character, you know, outside of Black Panther, or even just a character, you know. It doesn't always have necessarily – I hope it gets to a point where it's not just based off of the point of his black or white or any of those things, other than this is just an adult character that I like to see. So
Let me ask you a question. I'm some kid from Michigan. I'm around 16 years old. I want to come out to L.A. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make some films. I want to do some stuff. What advice do you have for that child?
I would say try things out. I would say get around people that are better than you, that can help inspire you and help you with starting to form, like, ideas. You know, like, I think that's the one thing that's always helped me, is I've always tried to find myself and prayed to be around people that are better than me so I can learn how it works. You know, when I started drawing, I remember the first time I was drawing and trying to figure that out. And the dude said, he's like, dude, you're just tracing. You're not drawing. He's like, take the tracing paper away. Try to draw it yourself. You know, if I see the 16-year-old, like, hey, let me see you drawing. All right, let me see you try it yourself. You know, who are you around? You know, really take that time out, because the quicker you can figure that out, the faster you'll be able to get your ideas out. You'll be able to push yourself, and it'll be fun, and have fun. Like, it's okay if you mess up. It's all right. Just have fun and learn from those mistakes, and don't be so big on your ego where you can't take constructive criticism. Know the difference between constructive criticism and a dream killer, but take that time out.
Let me take it to a different spectrum here. I'm a person right now in Hollywood. I feel like I've been spited. I feel like I've been done wrong.
Okay.
What advice do you have for that person whose truth and perception might be mixed? Because we both know that a lot of people's truths are not the real truth. It's their perception.
True. Very true. Very true. You know what? I would say, take it as a learning lesson. You know, don't let it. Some things aren't meant for you. You know, or you feel like you're like, yo, I'm meant to be here. Then you get there and you find out it's not that. You might have dodged a bullet. You know, and it sucks. But that doesn't mean stop. That just means, okay, you know what? This wasn't what I thought it was. And you know, this situation happened. Don't let it stop you from your overall goal. This is just a moment where you might have to reassess, try something different, or take that in and be like, you know what, next time I got it. I know how to deal with this person. You know, don't let it deter you. Don't let it stop you, but take it as a learning lesson. That's what I would tell them.
You know, Gene, not a lot of people know what to say, but you know exactly what to say, and you're very inspirational. For an hour and a half, listening to you. For an hour and 40 minutes, we've been listening to you, and we've loved everything you had to say. You know, very grateful that you shared your knowledge with us. How can we get in touch with you? How can we look at your stuff? How can we watch your stuff and enjoy it?
If you want to get in contact with me, I would say go to my Instagram, Gene, GENE_Freeman, FREEMAN. IMDb has links to the movies that I worked on, the shows that I worked on. They're really good at that. And that would be the best bet if you wanted to check out my stuff, if you want to get a hold of me. Those would be the two best ways for sure.
Well, Gene, it's been a blessing having you on the show. Let me ask you another question here. You know, what made it, what made the people on Mandalorian want you to be on the set for a longer period of time that you were set to be on set?
Man, you'd have to ask God that question.
Right, but I'm asking you, and God's speaking through you, my friend.
Yeah. So I would say I was just blessed. Like, I was always ready to work. I was ready to do whatever was needed to be done. I was very respectful. I'd always ask Ryan, I was like, is there anything I can do? I mean, even when I'd be off the clock, real quick, if you need me to hold the pad, because I remember there was someone getting ready to do a gag, and I was done. I was wrapped. But I was like, it was a pretty big gag. And I was like, I asked Joe Perez. He's one of the main riggers. I was like, hey, do you want me to spot just in case, because we're a team? It's not always about the check. I think that's another thing about me, too, is it's not always about the money. It's not always about the role. It's, if anything, for me, it's about just knowing what
the enjoyment.
The enjoyment. As long as I know what it is, I'm down. At least I'll give it. I'll let you know if I can do it or not. I was very honest on set, working on The Mandalorian. I was always ready to work out, and I was always shaking hands and saying thank you.
Communication and thanks seems to be one of your biggest winners.
Yeah. It's
grateful.
Truly a blessing. Like Jeff. Yeah. Jeff was great. Jeff was the one who always would call me. He'd be like, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? And being open. I was like, we can say it. Yeah, I can do that. I can do this. And, and being ready to work, and speaking on it. That's another thing, too. I think what you do in your closet, in your private time, I was very animate about, I'm going to be on these shows. I would vision board. I would write it down. I would talk about it in my car as if it already happened. So, and here I am. I even said I wanted to be on more shows and talk about things and be an inspiration. And the fact that you hit me up and the fact that I'm able to do it and talk for 2 hours with someone about my journey, about the people that inspire me and help me, that just shows how powerful this is.
I've had a lot of people that have asked to be on the show, and they're like, well, I have nothing to plug, so I have nothing to say. And it's like, if my show is just something for you to plug, then you can go on Conan O'Brien, you can go on any show you want to go. That's not what I want. What I want to hear is why are you great? What made you great?
Right.
Other people are calling you great. I see that you're doing great work. Inspire other people. You want to show show real power? Make other people powerful.
Right. That's what I love to do. I'm a point guard. I can shoot.
Point guard, baby. Make other people powerful. Yeah.
There you go. That's me all day. That's me all day. I'm one of those. I love if you're winning, we're winning.
That's right. We're winning as a team. That's why we're together. Yeah. Man, it's been so great talking to you, Gene. Thank you so much. What are you doing for the holidays?
I will be training. My brother Chris J, he put me through the ringer a little bit, and I was like, I got to get the dust off a little bit. So I'm going to train son. That's what I'm going to do.
Right. Well, Gene, you have yourself a great Hanukkah, a great Christmas, a great whatever you have. We love you very much, and we appreciate everything that you're doing right now. We wanted you on the show so bad. Now we had you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You guys are awesome. Come on, kisses.
We actually have a very huge following right now. We have a lot of people listening, so they love you very much. Thank you so much for sharing your information with us and making it all feel better what we can do in our own future.
Thank you. And guys, everybody listening, thank you for listening and tuning in. You guys are amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Have a great, great holiday.
You too.
Bye. All right, boys and girls. End of our show. Cinephiles Radio, hosted by Steve Pisa. Thank you very much for joining us today. I had a great time with Gene. Gene was an incredible human being who spoke to us about a lot of things that went on in his life. A lot of people that inspired him. Did you notice that he said mentor without saying mentor? Find people who know more than you. Find people who are better than you at what they do. Find supportive people. That's a mentor. Find mentors in your life. Find people who will love you for who you are and for what you want to be. Gene Freeman taught you a lot today about how to live your life and how to become a better person. He came from Michigan, from parents who owned a video store / comic book store. He grew up with stories that made him feel very strong and included. And he came to Hollywood only to make it stronger and to verify it, which he has. Thank you, Gene Freeman, for joining us today. We greatly appreciate it on our holiday special. I'm going to say Hollywood special. It's like a hamburger and some fries and a Coke. But holiday special. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I am Steve Pisa. This is Cinemaphiles Radio. That was Gene Freeman, the great Gene Freeman. Have a great day. God bless you all.